Today on our tech show, we're talking about home audio systems and how technology has impacted our ability to get things done. I'm Jill Nadeau in for Larry Mueller today. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Beth D'Angelo is back with us. She's a senior IT specialist for UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Do you have questions about improving your home audio system? And when it comes to all technology, what is one way it's improved your life or made it easier? We'll take any tech questions or comments. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Beth.
Good morning, Jill. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to talk with you. So let's talk about sound systems, right? There's a billion, I'm not exaggerating, options out there. Where do you even start with that?
Yeah, it's real different than when I was growing up and
right.
You had your basic stereo system with kind of the, you know, typical components. And while there still were a lot of options back then and the technology was pretty advanced in the analog world, now that music seems to be all in digital format for the most part, you know, we still have some folks who listen to records and older material, but really most of the music we consume is in digital format. So it stands to reason that the devices that we're using to listen to that music or to audio from TV or movie is going to come through a digital system as well. So those have really changed a lot in the last 5 to 10 years, especially with the improvements in wireless technology. Now you don't need to run speaker wires all over your house, so it's a really nice improvement. But there's really so much to choose from. The starting point that I usually go from is, you know, what am I most often going to be listening to audio on? What device am I going to be using most often to play that audio? If it's through the TV, that I'm just really using it for listening to movies and stuff through the TV, then there are certain types of speakers that work best for those setups. If it's going to be streaming music through Spotify or Apple Music or one of those services that I'm running on my phone, then there are other systems that are kind of more suited to that type of listening. So all different types of gear that you can get into now that will kind of improve your ability to listen to music kind of wherever you are and under whatever conditions you want to listen in.
Right. It's overwhelming. So do you think the best thing is to start with one thing first? Say, okay, I've got a TV. I listen to a lot of movies. Where do we go from there? Is that the best way to start?
Yeah. I mean, really, that's kind of where I start from is what am I going to use the most? And that's where I want to put, I guess, the most research and potentially the most money into is the thing I'm going to use the most. The great thing about some of the systems that are coming out now is there are components that are more specifically adapted to use with your TV, and then you can also connect and basically link up external speakers aside from the one that you've got connected to your TV and use all of those speakers as a system together to play sound, whether it's from the TV or then from another audio source like your phone or your computer.
So back in the day, you would go out and you'd buy a receiver first. Mm-hmm. Do you still do that? Is that something that people should be looking at?
You know, it really depends on the system. Most of the ones that are coming out now for the newer TVs don't require any kind of a receiver. And the same with a lot of the audio systems that are out. Funny thing is, I actually have my TV connected through about a 30-year-old analog receiver running out to some really good old analog speakers that I've been using for, you know, most of my adult life. So I'm still kind of using a very old sound system for my TV, but the TV I had has a really terrible speaker in it, and I didn't want to have to go out and buy a new system. So I kind of retrofitted what I already had in my kind of old stereo equipment.
Well, that makes sense. And I've noticed that some of the new TVs don't have the greatest speaker system. And so you almost have to have an additional speaker, don't you?
Yeah, trying to listen, like on the TV I have, it's not that old, it's maybe 5 years old, but trying to listen to a movie or a TV show on the speaker that came directly with the TV, it's terrible.
Yes.
it's very low quality. And I think there a lot of the TV manufacturers are now focusing on separate components for sound. So they're building all of the digital visual technology into the TVs, like this 4K video, but they're not focusing as much on the sound that comes with them so that they can then kind of introduce into the market these separate components for sound.
Right.
So another revenue stream for them.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's talk about the speakers themselves. Now, I've heard that wireless speakers are not as good as wired speakers. Is that still the case?
Yeah, there's always going to be some signal loss when you're dealing with a wireless connection versus a wired connection. I think most folks probably would never notice the difference, but some people who are real audiophiles who don't want to lose any of that sound quality may, you know, argue that the sound quality is really less with that wireless setup. But overall, if you're talking about listening to digital audio, the sound quality is actually going to be diminished on digital audio versus playing an actual record or a CD anyway. So you're already losing some of that sound quality by going with a digital format.
Okay, that makes sense. And what about Bluetooth speakers? What's the difference between a Bluetooth speaker and a wireless speaker?
Well, it's kind of similar thing. So wireless and Bluetooth are two different ways of connecting over the airwaves. So a wireless setup would go through your Wi-Fi router, which your internet connects to. So the speaker system would actually become part of your home network. And whatever you were playing music on would speak to that speaker or play music through that speaker over your home data network. If you're talking Bluetooth, that's more of a one-to-one connection between one device and one speaker or one set of speakers. So on Bluetooth, you can say you're on your iPhone. You can search out any Bluetooth devices that are available in the area. So if you've got several Bluetooth speakers in your house, your phone will find it when you're close enough to use it, attach to it, and play music through it. Whereas on a full wireless system, it's a little bit more of a home networking setup.
Right, which is kind of nice because I know if I go from the basement where I have a Bluetooth speaker upstairs, it still plays the Bluetooth downstairs and not upstairs. So it can get confusing,
correct,
can't it?
Also, it can cut out because that Bluetooth,
yes,
signal will only travel about, usually only get about 30 feet distance before you start losing the signal with,
right,
Bluetooth.
Right, very frustrating. So,
yeah.
Now, there are a lot of people that really like to listen to vinyl records still. How does that fit into a turntable, fit into a audio setup these days?
Well, they do have adapters now that you can use where you can basically, there's turntables now that can wirelessly connect either through a wireless network or through Bluetooth to an external speaker. If you're trying to connect an older turntable to produce sound through a wireless setup or a Bluetooth setup, likely you're going to need some sort of a Bluetooth transmitter through a newer receiver. So if you can connect the turntable to a receiver and that receiver then has a wireless transmitter or a Bluetooth transmitter, which allows it to connect to those speakers, then you could presumably take you know, a 50-year-old record player and play it through your Bluetooth speakers.
Great. I think I have one of those.
Cool.
And what about a sound bar? Okay, we hear about, oh, sound bars, they work great. How do they hook up to a system?
Well, generally a sound bar, most often those are purchased to go with a television. So that's going to be kind of creating a somewhat of a surround sound without having multiple speakers around your house to produce that, since the sound bar spreads out that sound over a larger space. Those generally connect if you're going to your TV and you're not going to do a Bluetooth or a wireless connection through an HDMI or some other wired connection directly to your TV. You're going to get really the best quality sound when you're using a wired connection to one of those sound bars. But a lot of them do have wireless features, which allow them to either connect through your wireless network or through Bluetooth to your TV.
Okay. So where's the best placement then for that sound bar?
People usually put them right underneath their TV.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's really because you're watching, so you're facing the TV.
Mm-hmm.
So you want the sound projecting at you the same way that the video is projecting at you, usually,
okay,
with those.
That makes sense. And when you hook up a soundbar, and this is for a friend, actually for me. So when I hook up a soundbar, I've got one for my TV. There's a reason why I can't put the soundbar right by my TV, and I'd like to do it by Bluetooth or wireless. Where do I go first? Do I go to my TV to hook it up, or do I go to the soundbar to hook it up?
if the soundbar does have wireless features on it, there's usually a button on the soundbar to press to put that wireless device into pairing mode.
Okay.
So I would look at the manual that came with your soundbar and find out how to put that into a pairing mode. Once you put that in pairing mode, you should be able to go into the settings on your TV and your TV's network or wireless connection settings will then have an option to search for Bluetooth devices. And the device that's in pairing mode will then send out a signal to your TV saying, I'm here, you can pair with me. Sometimes there's like a four-digit code that you need to enter in order to pair the two. Usually that'll be in the instructions for your sound device.
Okay.
And then those two will start talking to each other.
Wonderful. I'm going to try that. And if not, I'll call
you.
If it doesn't work, I'll call you.
All right, great.
You have a question for Beth. Please give us a call, 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go right to an email we've got from Emmanuel in Strawberry Point, Iowa. He says that after a Zoom meeting, a file from them remains in his downloads folder, I'm assuming from Zoom. He always deletes it. Would the Zoom company, if he didn't delete the file, be able to turn on his mic and video camera?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are concerned about the video and audio devices on their laptops or phones being able to be accessed by a third party. Based on, you know, whatever software you might have installed on there or things like that. And that is a legitimate concern, actually. I do, and actually most of the folks who work in technology that I know of actually put a little cover over the camera on their laptops just to make sure, like a piece of tape, or they actually make a little device you can slide over there just because we're all paranoid. I mean, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean someone isn't watching.
That's right.
So it's a legitimate concern. I wouldn't be as concerned about Zoom as an organization doing something like that. They are a reputable company with a very high security standards who are used globally for very high visibility meetings. I think it would be pretty off-brand to see that coming from a company like Zoom. But what you do want to be careful of is other apps or application software that you're downloading, whether it's onto your laptop or onto your tablet or your phone. You want to make sure that those are from reputable companies. You want to do your research on what you're downloading. You also want to make sure you have virus protection on your machine, on whatever device you're using. Those are things that are going to protect you from whatever software may be on your system, potentially hijacking, either the camera or the audio on that device. And I know that there are some applications specifically for phones that do have listening capability when you're not using them. So I've read about this in a few different articles where when you agree to the end user license agreement to install that application, there's language in there saying that it can listen while you're not using the app.
Wow.
So I know nobody reads those
no.
license agreements because they're so long, but you'd be surprised at what apps can and can't do once you've installed them on your phone or on your tablet or your laptop.
I think we've all had the experience of talking about a product and then hour later we go to Facebook and there it is, it's advertising for it. So that's exactly
how it happens.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I use a Post-it note over my camera. It works really well. So just a tip.
That's a great hack.
Yeah, for sure. This is the Larry Mueller Show, and I'm Jill Nadeau. Natalie Guyette is our producer today, and Christina Myshock is our technical director. This is the Larry Mueller Show. Beth D'Angelo is back with us. She's a senior IT specialist from UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. What tech questions are on your mind? Join in by calling 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we did get another email from Bruce wondering if he could get better audio by connecting his powered speakers via USB or the 3.5-millimeter jack?
Good question. Personally, I would go with the 3.5-millimeter jack over USB. That 3.5-millimeter jack that he's talking about is looks kind of similar to the old style of plugging headphones into a tape deck or a Walkman, mm-hmm. Except it's a little bit larger. So it's actually an RCA connection, which is giving an analog sound, which is going to have less signal loss than going through USB, which is going to convert to digital sound. And when you go from analog to digital, there's always going to be loss with that sound. So if you have the option to go with RCA and that 3.5 millimeter jack, that's what I would use.
Okay, great. Thanks for that question. Let's go to the phones. We've got Alex in Janesville. Hi, Alex.
Hey. Yeah, I'm running into a problem with, I'm primarily using my soundbar through my TV for video games. I'm running into a latency problem when I try to send sound through like higher modes for like surround sound rather than just having it as stereo.
Beth, did you?
It sounds like it's okay. Yeah, it's a little bit laggy. So your sound is coming out after the action that you're seeing on screen. That can be really confusing, especially if you're doing gaming. I'll ask a follow-up just to help me better diagnose. How is the soundbar connected to the screen you're watching? Is it a wired connection or a wireless connection?
It's going through the HDMI ARC port in my TV.
Okay, so it's going through the HDMI. And I was going to say, if it was a Bluetooth or a wireless connection, that certainly could explain lag. You also may have an HDMI cable that's not great. The connection might be a little bit wonky. Sometimes if you replace the cable, you can get rid of that lag. There are also higher-end HDMI cables that process data faster. So you can try a higher-end HDMI cable for it. Or if you have another type of input-output cable like DVI or DVI-D or something of that nature that you could send the signal through. You can always try that to see if it's actually the connection between the devices that's causing the lag or something within the sound device or the video device that might be processing slow. So eliminating that cable as the problem is really the first step to figuring out why.
Okay, thanks for the question, Alex. Appreciate that. Now, Beth, when we're talking about cables, does it really matter how much you pay for a cable? Because you can get some pretty cheap. Does that mean you're going to have problems usually?
Yeah, you get what you pay for generally with cable.
Okay.
Certain things you can go really low end on, like something like Ethernet cable. If you're just running data cable through your house, you can buy that by the spool, very, very cheap. You don't need to go with anything high end on that. But when you're talking about trying to transmit like 4K video and audio between devices and you want to keep that sound and that video crisp and timed well and working properly, using a higher end HDMI cable with better insulation, with more sturdy connectors, those are really going to increase the chances that you're not going to have those problems.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones then. We've got Nick in Green Bay with a question. Hi, Nick.
Hi, I've got two questions for you. But first, your producer, she's a sweetheart.
She is.
Now, my question is, and I tried to solve the problem with buying a new TV, but my wife said no. downstairs in their family room, I'm playing PlayStation, and my uncle gave me a receiver, and he's gone now, so I'm never going to get rid of that receiver. But the problem I got is the TV doesn't have any outputs. The only thing I see is the digital optical output. I don't think it's an output. I think it's an input for, like, a DVD player. Is there any way to get past this? I think I'm kind of stuck, and, you know, you should tell my wife I need a new TV, but.
Nick.
My second question is, and I think I already know the answer. I'm into like electronics big time, but I amazingly bought a laptop at rummage sale for school for $25. And it's got Windows 10 on there, so it's a new computer, but the sound just sucks. Would you suggest, say, just a Bluetooth speaker for that? That's what I would assume, but, you know.
Okay, thanks, Nick. What do you think, Beth?
Yeah, so as far as TV without output options, the one thing I would guess would be on there, which is on, I mean, most TVs of the last 25, 30 years would be an RCA output. So that would be like the three different color little circular plugs. I think it's usually yellow, white, and red. And that's the white and red are the video and the yellow is the audio. And you should be able to run a three cable RCA out of that TV into a receiver. You can get like an RCA out to 3.5 inch in. So it would come out of the TV through RCA and into your receiver via that 3.5 millimeter audio jack. So you could run that into the headphone or the output.
Okay.
And then as far as speakers for laptop use, really, I personally use a Bluetooth speaker for pretty much all of my devices other than my TV. They're the simplest to use. You can go between devices. Getting wired speakers for your laptop is really kind of, there are actually a few options out there now for wired speakers for laptops, but you know, you plug those into the headphone jack that comes out of the laptop and it plays just like it's on headphones. I have a nice Bose mini Bluetooth speaker that I use on my laptop, my tablet, my iPhone, everything else. I just kind of move it around the house with me as I go. It's waterproof, works great. The sound is awesome. Highly recommend it.
Okay. So new speaker for you, Nick, but not a new TV. All right. Thank you for calling. If you have any questions for Beth, give us a call. Our lines are open, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. And we do have a message here from Dennis, who couldn't stay on the line, but he has a Bluetooth speaker that he's been using wirelessly with his iPad for years, but now it doesn't want to connect. What could be going wrong with it?
Well, any number of things could be going wrong with it. My best guess would be that often, you know, when you've been using a wireless device over time, that wireless antenna can start to lose its power or its ability to transmit a signal. One thing I would do to test to see if it's the speaker or the iPad that's having the problem is to try to connect a different device to that speaker to see if it will connect to something else. If it'll connect to something else but not to the iPad, that means the problem's likely with the iPad. If it won't connect to any other Bluetooth device, then likely the speaker is having a problem and it might be time to replace it.
Okay. Now, does it get to a point where the software on either one of those devices, they don't work together?
That is possible, especially with Apple devices, iPads. Those generally update automatically. A lot of people don't turn off those updates, so they'll get all the changes that Apple is making to those over time without even knowing it. And there could be something that changed in the firmware or the drivers that the computer or the tablet uses to connect to that wireless device that's no longer compatible with that wireless device.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. We've got another email here from Steve in Milwaukee. He says that perhaps that you could comment on center speakers, which by design tend to better handle and amplify the speaking voices for broadcast shows. A nice feature for those of us who are aging and finding it difficult at times to understand the spoken voice. Got a comment on that, Beth?
Well, this is a little bit out of my depth as far as you know, speaker systems and acoustics go. I didn't know that something called center speakers really helps amplify the speaking voices on broadcast shows. That's nice for me to know. Appreciate the tip, Steve. I don't really have any comments because, like I said, this is kind of my first hearing of it, but you don't just have to be aging to have difficulty with the spoken voice. I have the same problem, Steve. My hearing is not great. Too much time at loud rock concerts. And trying to actually hear what people are saying on TV is really difficult sometimes for me. So I actually put on a closed captioning often so I can read it while I'm listening, because otherwise I'm going to miss things.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
I'm going to look into those center speakers and see if I can find a better way.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I think I will too. Maybe we can talk about it on the show next time that you're with us, Beth.
Yeah, let me do some research.
Yeah, great. Jeff from Edgerton emailed to say that internet radios are being sold in the marketplace, I guess. What are the pros and cons of these devices?
So this is a device that basically picks up things like digital radio stations, podcasts. It's similar to, I don't know if you remember, maybe 15 years ago or so, they started making simplified machines where folks who weren't comfortable with using a full laptop or tablet could just do email. So it was like a little email machine. And these internet radios are kind of similar to that, where if folks want to be able to listen to digital music, but they're not really well-versed with technology and don't want to go so far as to have a smartphone or a tablet or a computer to be able to listen to that music, internet radios are a device that kind of aggregates those applications and digital music streams and allows you to just kind of use a very simple interface to access music over the internet to stream music.
Okay, great option. Let's go to the phones now. We've got Pete in Peshtigo. Hi, Pete.
Yes. What I have is a desktop computer, and I would like to be able to wire better sounding speakers into it using wires instead of wireless. Right now I have what came with the package, Harman Kardon, two little speakers and a sub, but I'd like to have better quality. Can I do that through wires to have a powered sub and powered speakers? And how would I do that?
Yeah, so I think the best way to go about that would probably be to, if possible, to run the laptop to a receiver, if you have a receiver, and then to run the speakers off of the receiver. You would need some sort of cable that would, let's see, you have likely a headphone jack on your laptop, so you would need like a that's a 1.5 millimeter to a 3.5 millimeter to go from a laptop to an analog receiver to do that. So it's just like a little adapter cable that you can plug that in through.
And do you have a recommendation for a type of speaker that might be best for Pete?
Once you run to a receiver, you can put any kind of speakers you want off of that. So if you wanted to run an old wired speaker system off of it, you could. If it's a newer receiver that allows you to do wireless, then you can whatever type of speakers, really sky's the limit once you go to a receiver. You can attach to just about anything.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Pete. Next up is Ron in La Crosse. Hi, Ron.
Yes, I have a couple of problems with the audio and video not being in sync. I have a digital analog converter, and it'll record if you put in a thumb drive. It's a what they call TERC, E-R-K is a brand name. But when I play back a recordings, the audio and video, they're often not in sync. And another problem, I have a rather pricey sound plate that runs off my receiver or my, I suppose you call it my, when I'm online and I listen to iTunes. And the receiver that I have, which is Onkyo, rather a good one, and the sound plate are never in sync with each other. So I figure, you know, and I try to fiddle with the receiver's features, figuring, well, there's, they have a feature called 15 or 30 second delay or something, but it didn't seem to rectify that problem with the audio being in sync with each other on the receiver and the sound plate.
Beth? Well, Ron, you're way over my head on this
one.
Yeah,
I was confused myself.
So a digital analog converter, so you're running analog sound out to digital speakers. Is that what you're... And
yeah.
Then trying to record it?
Well, on the digital analog converter, that's a separate problem. The audio and video aren't in sync when I play back the recording off the thumb drive.
I see. Okay, so you record something on a thumb drive, and then when you go to play it back, and what are you playing back on? Is it on a laptop or on a TV or?
No, well,
are you plugging that into?
Yeah, the digital analog converter is plugged into a USB or HDMI port on my receiver,
uh-huh.
and then uh-huh. the audio from the receiver goes to the TV. But as far as the sound plate, well, I usually hook that up with linked up with Bluetooth usually.
Right. Yeah. I'm concerned that the USB link might be where the problem is trying to play that digital file off of a USB drive. To me, that sounds like the bottleneck, but you're a bit over my head in how you have things connected, so I don't want to lead you astray.
Okay, thanks, Ron. Good luck with that. It sounds complicated. we got an email from Jack to ask if our if you could recommend a jukebox-style software for his digital collection to play through his speaker receiver. He's thinking of something to install on his laptop and use it as a music server. He wants to be able to view the screen and page through albums like in a bar or a restaurant and then choose songs to play. He is not a fan of the complication of iTunes.
Yeah, there's actually a great app out there called TouchTunes, and it's nice. You can actually, it's a mobile app, so if you wanted to, you could put it on your phone, and all of the kind of jukebox features that you're looking for are on your handheld device. I'm not sure if they have a desktop version of it. I've only used the mobile. But it's a really cool way to be able to, aggregate your music collection and kind of flip through it like you are on a jukebox. I would highly recommend checking out TouchTunes.
Oh, that's cool. I think that's just what he's looking for. So thank you. Thank you for the question. Let's go to Bill in Oregon. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm trying to connect an older analog turntable to a modern digital AV receiver. And I'm running into the issue of just the signal strength, just because the old analog, used to have an old analog Kenwood, and it failed, and now I'm trying to hook it up into my Yamaha, and I just can't get, either crank it up, or it's the strength from the output from the turntable is so low that it's not barely negligible on the stereo. And I've tried a few products that I found hunting on the internet, but they haven't been very effective or very likable to my taste. And I'm just wondering if you have any recommendations for hooking up an analog turntable to a digital receiver.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Any ideas, Beth?
Well, just curious, Bill, what kind of output the turntable has on it. So what kind of cable are you running between the turntable and the receiver?
Well, what I've got is, it's a gold-plated, grounded RC45.
Okay, so it's proper?
It's the old-fashioned, it's a 1980s Harman Kardon.
You're running over copper wire.
Copper wire with gold-plated tips, and it all works great on an analog system. But I just can't get good sound at all, with it's either the signal strength issue or with some of the things I've tried, the sound's just been really awful. And I'm just looking for something that might function as something you might recommend as a good preamp for this kind of situation.
Yeah, the only other thing I can think of is if the digital receiver that you're running to has an equalizer on it, if you have a way to boost the signal using the equalizer, but it sounds like it's not getting a good signal to the actual receiver, so the input on that receiver for that gold-plated copper might not be picking up that signal properly. And I'm not familiar with any products that would give you a better signal using copper. Unless you wanted to start splicing some wires. So unfortunately, I don't have an answer for you that's probably going to help.
Okay. Well, sorry about that, Bill. Do some more digging, I guess. Someone must have done it somewhere out there. Do you have a tech question for Beth? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Get you on fairly quickly. We've got open lines. Let's go to an email. We've got Deb from Plymouth. She emailed about laptops. She said, number one, her husband needs a laptop to create and print documents, do Zoom meetings, read emails, and search the internet. He moves it around in the house for meetings. Any recommendations for that? And secondly, her mother needs something to Skype, read emails, and play games, and she's in her 80s. Any recommendations for her?
All right. So as far as your husband goes, it sounds like he needs something with a little bit more kick to it than just kind of your, low-end basic laptop. There are, Dell has some great models right now in the Inspiron line. They're really reasonably priced. Any of their like i5 processors, those certainly would have enough power to do all of the tasks that you listed that your husband is looking to do on a laptop. So I really like Dell products. I've been working with them for years. They've got one right in front of me right now.
So
can't recommend any higher. They're really reliable and they really stand by their products. So and they don't pay me to say that. And then as far as for your mom, who's looking for something a little bit less complex, if she's just looking to do like a video conferencing and emails and playing games, and she's a little bit older and may not be as versed in technology, there are devices called Chromebooks out there, which are a lot simpler than a laptop and also a lot less expensive. You can get those in the like $200 to $300 range, which would really provide everything your mom needs to be able to use Skype or Zoom or FaceTime or any of those video conferencing packages, and also to send email and play games. And they're very simple to use, much less expensive, and just you don't have all the complexities that a full laptop would have, which it doesn't sound like it's necessary for your mom for what she wants to use it for.
For sure. Great. Thanks for that question, Deb. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Join us tomorrow when we talk to Shyla Mergain about prioritizing mental health while going for a goal in life. And then we're going to talk about how memory works in our brain with the author of a new book. That's 11 to 1230 on the Ideas Network. We are talking about tech with Beth D'Angelo, Senior IT Specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And we've got a bunch of calls, so let's go right to the phones, Beth. First one up is Scott in Madison. Hi, Scott.
Morning. I've heard audiophile used on several occasions, and being from the 60s and 70s, that used to be a person that had purchased stereo equipment that reproduced sound beyond the limits of human ear ability to detect. Is that still the case?
Well, I'm not sure. The only way I've ever heard audiophile used is as somebody who is a lover of music and more of a connoisseur.
Right. So there's two different ways, right? There's audiophile, the one word, and audiophile, the two words, right?
Oh, I see. Yeah. So yeah, I'm speaking in the one word sense, an audiophile in the Greek sense of the word.
Right, right. So an audiophile itself is just a file that is audio only, correct?
Correct. Yeah, that would be any file that contains audio data only.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Scott?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Let's go on to Nick in St. Germain. Hi, Nick.
Hi there. How are you today?
Great. What's on your mind?
So I kind of wanted to share some experience, but also had a question about maybe why this is the case. When connecting a Xbox or a DVD player to my TV and having issues with latency problems like some of the earlier callers, I found that connecting the optical audio cable from the Xbox to the TV solves that problem. So I guess my question is, why would that be? And is HDMI just not good at transmitting audio?
Yeah, really the difference is the resolution of audio that those transmit. So with HDMI can pass higher resolution audio, so better quality audio, but not as fast as optical can. So if you're looking for higher quality, HDMI is really the way to go. But if you're looking to reduce latency, optical is going to pass that much faster.
Okay, thank you, Nick. Let's go to Hippie Dave in Iowa. Hello, Dave.
Hello. Say, I got an older smart TV that doesn't have Bluetooth. It's got Wi-Fi. But I have a lot of company, and we like to play music videos. And my tablet has Bluetooth that I can get to my boombox and my speakers, but I can't get the videos on my TV. Is there a device I can plug in, like a what do they call it? I don't know, Fire Sticks. Well, you can tell by my name how old I am.
Yeah, Dave, there's, sorry, Hippie Dave. there's a whole bunch of devices you could plug into that TV that would allow you to transmit YouTube videos. So you mentioned one, the Fire Stick, that's made by Amazon, the Kindle Fire Stick. That's just either an HDMI or a USB device that you can plug into your TV that'll allow you to access different things on the internet. So there'll be a YouTube app on that display that comes from that device that allows you to connect to YouTube and watch whatever you'd like on the TV. There's also Apple TV, Roku. Gosh, there's probably a list as long as my arm of different devices you could do this with. But those are the big three, are the Fire Stick, Apple TV, and the Roku device.
Okay. And where can Dave go to actually, you know, get a little more information about some of this stuff or to find out how it works? What's a good resource?
Yeah, you know, I usually would look. There's a couple of different online resources that I use for vetting products like that. CNET is one of them. They do lots of product reviews. I've been using them for a couple of decades for checking out products and seeing kind of what the best is for my purposes. They give really detailed reviews. They also kind of categorize things as here's the best in the least expensive category. Here's the best if you're looking for high quality audio. Here's the best if you're looking for streaming video. So I really use them a lot for information.
And you said it was PNET, like P as in Paula?
C like coffee.
Oh, C like coffee. Okay.
So yep,
CNET, N-E-T.
Yep.
Okay, got
yep.
it. All right, excellent. I will check that out myself. That sounds like a great resource.
Yep.
Okay, if anybody's got a call or a question, rather, give us a call, 800-642-1234. We do have open lines, so do that right now. We do have an email from Mark in Wisconsin Rabbits. Wisconsin Rapids. He called, but he couldn't stay on the line. He has an Apple device, and the latest devices don't have a CD/DVD slot. Any recommendations for buying an external drive that would be compatible?
Yeah, so it's most laptops now are not coming with CD or DVD drives. So the latest, I think the last three that I've had did not come with one. So that's a question I've gotten from a lot of people I know of CD drives gone. What do I do with all these CDs? How do I get all of that digital media onto my new laptop? And there are hundreds of different manufacturers that make external CD and DVD drives that you can plug in to your laptop via a USB port. Apple will sell you one for about $80, but there's really, you know, if you want to make sure something is compatible with your Mac, but not necessary. If you just search on Amazon for external CD/DVD drive Mac, it'll show you a whole list of various devices that are compatible. Most of them are in the like $25 to $40 range, so you definitely don't need to spend $80 on an Apple branded one. So I would say sticking with kind of a reputable company that you've heard of before is always a good choice. So, you know, I can't even remember off the top of my head any of the manufacturers now that make them. But they're, like I said, there's hundreds of them out there and they're not expensive.
Okay, great. Good option there. Let's pivot a little bit and talk about technology and productivity. You know, in theory, technology is supposed to make our lives easier, maybe add a lot of convenience. But are there some things that you feel like technology has made easier for you when it comes to that kind of stuff?
Great. So this is a bit more in my wheelhouse than the audio stuff. So productivity is kind of my wheelhouse for the job that I do. My team actually provides all the productivity applications for UW-Madison campus. So something I'm very familiar with is how do we use these to make ourselves more productive? What do we use in order to make ourselves more productive? And, you know, how do these tools sometimes get in our way? And what can we do to keep them from getting in our way? So it's really about, I guess, what are you looking to automate within your life? What things do you want to offload from your brain? That's the way I kind of use these applications. There are so many things coming at us from all different directions all the time that it's impossible for us to remember everything, to remember to do everything, to keep track of all the tasks and events and things going on. And there are a lot of applications out there that kind of help you through those things so you don't have to keep it all in your brain. So I call my iPhone my brain. This is my external brain. and I've got a ton of applications on there that help me keep my life in order. So it's everything from the things I use for work, like my email and chat tools for communicating with my coworkers, and then also video conferencing and things like that. But then a big part of what I do is document sharing, being able to create documentation, share that with other people, and live edit those documents together. That's something I do a lot of at work, and that's something that has made myself and my team much more productive. Rather than making changes to something and then sending it around for everybody to comment on, we use Google Docs. And then five of us can be in there at the same time editing the same document, and it's saving live, and we're not losing any data, and we can all access it whenever we need to. So a lot of the productivity applications within the Google suite of tools are really helpful. Another one is Google Calendar. If you are like me and you have a busy life, and I have young children who also have busy lives, trying to keep track of all the things that we need to do on any given day is really difficult. So being able to use Google Calendar to share that with my kids so that we can all of us see what's going on for the family in one place. Now, I still do also keep a whiteboard calendar in my kitchen because you know, I like having that just for backup purposes, and I can look at it anytime I'm in there. But things like Google Calendar are really helpful. Whole bunch of other apps that we would kind of call life hacks that we can go into as well, depending on what you have questions about.
Okay. Now, what about things like, you know, everyday things that not necessarily work related? You mentioned mm-hmm. the calendar, but what about like to-do lists or shopping lists? Do you have any recommendations?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I use something called Wunderlist. It's W-U-N-D-E-R, list, all one word. Okay. That's my list application. It synchronizes with my Microsoft Office, which is where all of my work stuff is kept. So it takes anything that I mark in Office and puts it on my Wunderlist if I want it to be a to-do. That's also where I put my personal to-dos. My kids' to-dos, anything I've asked someone else to do that I need to follow up on. It sets reminders that you can have come to your phone, to your tablet, to your laptop, whatever device it is you're looking at. If you want it to beep at you at certain times to remind you to take your medication or to follow up on a task, or that part of your task is supposed to be done by now but not the whole thing, you can break it down into smaller parts. Kind of like I use it for project managing my life.
Okay. That makes sense. Do you sometimes feel, though, that you just have too many apps and you're reminded about things too often?
Yes, and I'm very careful about how I set up notifications.
Okay.
Because I want the notifications to be the signal rather than the noise. I don't want my pocket buzzing every 5 seconds because I'm going to start to ignore it. So whenever I put a new app on my phone that is going to be reminding me of things, I'm very careful about the notification settings on that app, when it's going to notify me, what it's going to notify me about, and how it's going to notify me. So I'm actually paying attention to the things I need to pay attention to.
That's really important, isn't it, to make sure there are boundaries on that. So great. Well, let's go back to the phone. We've got all the lines filled, and looks like we're going back to audio. We've got Tim in Wausau with a question. Hi, Tim.
Hello. Just a couple quick comments, I hope. There was a misrepresentation earlier about the composite audio and video. It's the yellow is the video, audio is the red and white, left being the white, red being the right channel. And then,
sorry, I must have been talking too fast.
I thought that's what you said, Beth. I thought you had it right, but thank you, Tim.
And then the other one is when you were talking, the gentleman said about the center channel. That is typically something that you are going to find with your surround sound systems where you have, whether it be 5.1, 7.1, the center channel is usually set up for dialogue with the surround speakers set up for the effects.
Okay, so
I see.
Yeah, not necessarily a center speaker, but a center channel, which is a little different.
Yeah,
okay.
Whereas a soundbar can replicate that to some degree, but if you're specifically talking center channel for dialogue, that is generally part of your surround sound system, and that's where
most of your audio will come from.
Okay. Thank you, Tim.
That's where I got confused. I was reading center speaker instead of center channel. Yeah. Thank you for that, Tim.
Yeah, that's very helpful. We love our listeners. They're always telling us things that we don't know. Okay. Well, in the last minute, if you had one app to recommend for someone to make their life a little easier, what would you suggest?
Oh, let's see. One app to recommend to make someone's life easier. That is a really good question. I know that one app that I use every single day that very rarely fails me is called Dark Sky. And it's a weather app.
And that's
because I'm an outdoors person. Mm-hmm. I want to be outside as often as I can doing things outdoors. And usually I don't let the weather stop me, but I need something to help prepare.
Okay.
And preparing for what I want to do in the day requires having something I can rely on. And it is not a free app. It's one that you need to pay for. I believe it's like $2. So,
okay, great.
You know, it's not expensive, but
all right.
Go ahead.
Just going to stop you there a second, Beth. We're going to be going to the news. If you've got a question, give us a call, 800-642-1234. This is a Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau on the Ideas Network. Beth D'Angelo is our guest today. She's a senior IT specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology with 20 years of tech experience. Are you having problems with your computer, phone, or other technology? How do you use technology to be more productive? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Beth, before we go to the phones or look at some email, we did get some comments from some listeners about some things that we had talked about. Apparently, the Wunderlist app that you had talked about earlier, it's officially gone. According to CNET, your favorite tech site. And they do have an article there about five other list alternatives that that are good too. So just FYI.
I guess you can't download it anymore.
Yeah, you can't.
So I still have it on mine.
You have it. Yeah. So you're lucky.
I lucked out.
You're totally lucky. So, yep, there are some more out there. So I suggest you go to CNET to look at that. And the other one, let's see here. Oh, yeah, it was James. He emailed with a possible solution for the other caller who was having trouble with his turntable with the modem receiver. He said that he needs to do a search on Amazon or maybe even just go to an audio store if you can find one for a turntable preamp. Apparently, old turntables have very low output and not nearly as high as the modern line out signal, so it needs to be pre-amplified before feeding into his amplifier slash receiver. So thank you, James. That's we really appreciate that.
Well, that makes a ton of sense. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. So let's just go right. Oh, you know, you were talking about Dark Sky, I wanted to mention before we had to pop out for news. Was there anything else that you wanted to add about that, Beth? You said it was you had to pay for the app, right?
Yeah, it's like $2, but I think it's well worth it to have a very reliable weather app. Like I said, I check it every morning.
Okay. Yeah.
And then you don't have all the ads that come with all the free ones either. So it's less annoying.
Yes. So $2 flat that you just pay for the app and then that's it, right?
$2 one time.
One time.
You got it.
Perfect. Okay. Let's go back to the phone then. We've got Jack in Wisconsin Rapids who has a question. Hi, Jack.
Morning. I hope you haven't answered this one already, but I've got a MacBook Air and I've got iTunes with tons of my music on it. I just absolutely hate iTunes. I just hate it. What's a good app that I can dump everything onto to get the results that I need? iTunes half time won't play certain formats, you know.
All right, Beth, do you have an option for iTunes that works?
So you're looking for something that you can put all your music into rather than something to download music from?
No, but put all the stuff I have on iTunes and all my other music, I'd like to put on a good app on my MacBook Air and forget iTunes.
I see. Okay. So you want to be able to play it through something other than iTunes, just because that interface isn't working for you.
I don't like the way iTunes handles music, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of playing stuff through iTunes either. I generally actually don't use it for playing my music. I use Spotify for most things, but that's more for streaming music than stuff you've already downloaded. So I don't actually have anything other than iTunes as an option for it on my machine, but let me just do a quick search and see if there's anything out there that I can find. And if you want, I can answer it towards the end of the show.
Okay, that should work. I mean, there's a music app that comes with like Windows too, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, there's the stuff that comes with Windows. So the what is it called? Just the music player app.
I think that's what it is. Yeah, player.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's called Music Player.
That's not much better.
Quick search to see. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there for phones, but there's less out there for desktops and laptops.
Yeah,
so that's why I'm kind of struggling here to find something. I could give you a laundry list of ones for an iPhone or for an Android, but for an actual desktop machine, there's just little out there now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll let Beth multitask and look for that while
VLC.
We talk about.
Yeah. I was thinking of one I used to use called VLC, and it still is out there. So I was just checking to make sure it's still in existence, because I did get one that's a little old that's out of existence now in that Wunderlist. But VLC is the one I used to use, and it still exists. And it's one that I haven't used for a few years, but. That was a pretty good music aggregation app that you could play all your downloaded music files through, and it was a much better interface than iTunes.
All right. So that was D as in dog, L as in Larry, C as in car, right?
It's actually V like Victor.
V like Victor. Okay.
V, yes.
VLC.
Yes.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we got that. Thanks, Jack, for the question, and good luck with that. Next up is Tom in Phillips. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good afternoon. This is a great topic. I'm trying to do what I call a 365 digital picture project, and I've done some research, and I just can't find the right solution. I was wondering if you had any ideas. What I'm looking to do is set up a digital camera of some sort, and I want to take a certain picture of a perspective outside of my kind of front windows. At the same time of day, for a full year straight. And I don't want to do it manually. I want it to be automated, and preferably maybe even, send the pictures digitally to an app or something like that. But if I have to deal with cards, I can deal with cards. But do you have any ideas of kind of what would be the best way to go about doing that?
Yeah, so there are most digital cameras now have a wireless interface that allows you to connect them to an application on your phone or your tablet. I don't know as far as those applications go if there are any that have the automation that you're looking for, where you can schedule a photo to be taken at a specific time every day. But that would really be the feature that you're looking for in when you go to purchase a camera. When you're looking through the software options that come with that camera, you want to look through the features to see whether or not those types of automation functions are available within the software. So does it have a scheduling feature? Does it have an auto feature where you can set it up to take a picture for you at a certain time or on a certain prompt? If that's not the case, there is an app out there that's kind of interesting to me, and I'm not sure if it's able to interface with some of these camera apps yet, but it's possible in the future it will be able to. It's called If This Then That, or IFTTT. And what that is a tool that lets you connect a whole bunch of different applications together to do really complicated tasks. So basically you're telling the application, if it's this time of day, then open this application and take this action in that application. So it's kind of like programming without having to know how to code. So that's how we program is if-then statements, and this is an application that does that for you. So there may be a way to weave those, the application that your camera comes with on your phone with a scheduling automation task.
Okay. And Christina, our board op, had sent in that there's an app called Google Timelapse Photo, and that that might work for also. Yeah. So something to check into for sure. All right. Thank you very much, Tom. And let's go to an email. We had Jerry email to say that they had a Yamaha receiver that has a volume indicator that goes negative when turning the volume up and vice versa. They were given a very technical reason why, but was hoping that you might be able to elaborate on that. Is that, what do you think, Beth?
Oh, I have no idea why that would be happening. That's very strange. So the volume indicator goes negative when turning the volume up.
Yeah, and apparently goes positive when you turn it down.
When you turn it down. Well, that's very strange.
Yeah. crossed wire? I mean, what do you do in that
case? It's possible. Maybe a crossed wire, or maybe it's indicating some sort of signal loss when that volume is changed. I don't know.
Yeah, weird. Weird. Okay, well. Sorry we couldn't help you with that, Jerry. If someone out there has an answer, please give us a call. Barbara emailed that one needs to install Alexa. This would be for, I'm not sure what she meant by that. She needs to install Alexa. This would be for an elderly, visually impaired person who lives independently. He does not have a computer or smartphone. The building in which he lives has internet access, however. So suggestions for installing that, I guess, is her question.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of the little speaker devices that have Alexa built into them. Doesn't require you to have a smartphone or a computer or anything to connect it to. They are wireless ready, so they can connect up to the Wi-Fi internet access in the building. And then they have the Alexa application on them so that you can basically set them up to talk to it and ask it to do things for you. So no computer, tablet, or iPhone, smartphone needed in order to use one of those smart speakers.
Okay.
The Google Home system is very easy to set up. I know several people who have those. So I would recommend looking into the Google Home setup.
Google Home setup. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. We have open lines. If you have a question for Beth, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to another email. Chris emailed because that they couldn't get a Zoom meeting to play on the TV with AirPlay or HDMI. The video worked, but not the audio. Do you have any idea why that might be?
Video but not audio.
I'm
wondering if possibly the file type that the Zoom meeting I don't know if it was a recorded Zoom meeting or a live Zoom meeting that they were trying to watch. If it was a recorded Zoom meeting, it may be that the file type that was stored isn't properly readable by the TV. But if it was a live meeting, I'm just wondering if there may be some setting on that channel. So, you know, you plug into your HDMI and that goes to one of the inputs on your TV. And there may be configuration settings for those inputs to allow you to toggle on and off the audio. And it's possible that that channel didn't have audio turned on. But without seeing it myself, it'd be hard to diagnose.
Yeah, that's hard without a lot more information. Just on my own experience, not on a TV, but on an iPad, I couldn't get audio either, could see the video. And as it turned out, I had not gotten out of a previous Zoom call. So I was still hanging out there. And when the new one came in, I had no audio. So anyway, that could be a possible thing.
Other thing to check is the actual settings in Zoom. You choose the device that you're outputting audio onto, and
True.
You also choose the device that you're inputting in through a microphone. So it may be that that setting wasn't set to the output device that she was trying to use.
That's a very good point. That sounds very logical on that. Another email, Lisa from Trempolo emailed. She has some old laptop CDs, floppy disks, and an old computer hard drive tower that she would like to recycle. Now, how does she eliminate personal files and information on these items before dropping them at a recycling event? And is that still an issue that she needs to be concerned about?
100% something to still be concerned about, yes. I would never recycle any kind of data device from, you know, my personal computer or work computer or any of those things without making sure I wiped all the data off of it first. And so there's only a couple of different ways to ensure that you have really gotten rid of all the data on, say, a hard drive. It's easier with a CD. To get rid of that, you break the CD.
Right.
Just snap it. Floppy disk, same thing. You can snap it. But if you're talking about a hard drive, there are two ways to do it. One, you can use a really high-powered magnet. We call them a degausser. It will wipe everything clean off of that device. Most people don't have one of those. if you don't have a degausser, a high-powered magnet, you can remove the hard drive from that tower. So they're pretty easy to spot. If you open up the computer, pretty easy to find. About four screws it'll take to remove it, take that out, and smash it with a hammer. That's exactly what I do when I want to wipe out one of my hard drives. I smash all the plates with a hammer. If you're talking a laptop, same thing. It's just going to be a much smaller hard drive. Usually it screws into the underside of the laptop. There's like a couple of screws that you remove, and then it'll slide out from the side. So I would pull that out and smash it with a hammer.
So all those times that your computer didn't work, now is the time where you can get back.
Take out your frustration.
Smash it out.
Right.
And then Jim was wondering if an older model receiver, it's actually a 1970s Marantz 2270, can be connected or hooked up to a computer, iPad, TV, Chromebook, that type of thing.
Yeah, it really all depends on what kind of output that receiver has. If it has an output that allows you to put some sort of an analog to digital converter on it that will convert that signal to either a wireless signal that'll then transmit to digital speakers, or if it'll change that signal from analog to digital into a wired connection in speakers. But you need some sort of device that's going to really convert that signal from analog to digital.
Okay. As far as making lists and things like that we had talked about earlier, do you have a good one for a grocery list? Because that's one thing I think we all have in common, is that we go out and buy groceries. What do you use?
So grocery shopping, personally, I hate shopping altogether. And grocery shopping for me is like the lowest form of shopping. I hate doing it so much. Which I should start using the shopping, the remote shopping apps that you can use, like HelloFresh, where they like get all your groceries together,
right,
and you go
right.
Pick it up. But I don't, because I'm terrible about thinking ahead to do that stuff. And it's really like, oh no, I need to make dinner tonight and I don't have any chicken. I need to go to the grocery store. So that is one of my least organized parts of life, is really like getting a grocery list together. And honestly, I still use that whiteboard in my kitchen to write things down when I run out of them. And so if anybody out there listening has a good app to recommend for keeping their grocery list, please help me. I need help with this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I use something called List Ease. The thing that I like about it is that when you check up all your items, the little list guy comes out in with confetti to celebrate.
Oh, I need somebody to celebrate when I go grocery shopping.
That's what I thought. It makes me feel better. I know it's kind of silly, but, you know, it's great. So, yeah, if anybody has a list that they want to recommend, please give us a call. Or if you got a question, we still have time to take one or two more. 800-642-1234. So what are some things that you're excited about tech-wise these days? You got anything new coming down the line?
Well, I just actually, you know, I'm trying to use technology a little bit less in my life. And that's kind of one of the things that we were talking about ahead of time, is, you know, how does technology sometimes get in your way?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm actually using an app called OffTime, that lets me schedule when I can't use my phone.
Oh, okay.
It's telling me to get off technology and do something
else. I love it.
Yeah. So I put in there what I want for goals as far as how much I should be looking at social media and how much I should be streaming video and how much time I should be actually looking at my phone. And it will keep track of the time that I'm spending on there. It will, give me some data, which I love. And it will actually shut down applications on me if I'm using them too much. So it kind of helps me with that balance of not staring at my phone too much, not relying on technology too heavily to fill the spaces where I could be doing other things like getting outside and digging in my garden or, you know, grocery shopping, which I hate.
Well, that's a really good idea. And is that something that you could do for your kids too?
Yeah, actually, I do use something that's built into the iPhone iOS called Screen Time for my kids for ensuring that they're not spending too much time staring at their devices either.
Great. Oh, we do have a call from Joel in Sheboygan. Let's get that in real quick. Hi, Joel. Joel, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Hi. What did you want to say?
Mm-hmm. A call or two ago, you had somebody with an issue. They were trying to watch Zoom on a HDMI device.
Right.
I've actually happened a lot. We have an HDMI TV that we can just switch our computer monitor to and watch something. You have to check the output and input to make sure it says the right device.
Okay. So
that happens a lot.
Yeah, basically what Beth had said. So great. Confirmation on that. Thank you, Joel. And let's go to Rich in West Bend. Hi, Rich.
Hello. Question regarding the Apple App Store. You used to be able to find a search window on there to find the app you're looking for. They don't seem to have that anymore, or I don't know how to do it. Can you help me out?
Okay, Beth, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I'm just looking at my App Store app right now to see if it's changed.
Yeah,
mine still has a search down in the bottom right. So either I haven't gotten an iPhone update that you've got, or I'm not sure if maybe you want to try deleting the App Store. Well, no, you can't delete and re-download it because it's the App Store. If it was any other app, you could delete it and re-download it.
Yes. Well, you know, I did notice, Beth, a while back, the search used to be up at the top.
Yeah,
there was actually
down in the bottom.
Down
right
on the bottom.
Corner.
Yeah, so maybe mm-hmm. Rich, you just didn't see it because it's down there on the bottom where it wasn't before. So maybe that's something to think about there. So yeah, because I see it. So all right, okay, all right. Well, I think that just is about it for us, Beth. We really appreciate you coming on with us and answering all these questions.
Thanks for having me. I've learned a lot, actually, on the sound side of things that I didn't know before. So this has been just as helpful for me today.
It's great. It's nice to know that the expert can learn, too, so we don't feel so bad when we don't know anything. So thanks a lot.
Oh, there's no way to know all of this stuff. It's just such a wide variety that I learn something new every day.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, and we'll talk to you in a couple of months.
Thanks, Jill. Take care.
You bet. We've been talking about technology with Beth D'Angelo. She's a senior IT specialist of UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. On the show tomorrow, we'll talk with Shyla Morgane about how to prioritize your mental health while you're going for a goal in your life. And then we're going to talk about how memory works in our brain with the author of a new book. And check out our blog. We have a brand new blog post up there regarding Olympic books that have something to do with Olympics. So if you're missing it already, just go on the blog, get a list of books and check them out or buy one. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm in for Larry Mueller today. He'll be back with us tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay well.